like you twisted that around a little bit, almost as though I sent you ahead the talk that I wrote, because you actually spoke right from the message today. Good morning. Wow, good morning, good morning. Welcome to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. I'm Reverend Karen Rice, and I am the spiritual leader of this community, and I'm very happy that you would be joining me on this beautiful day. Yes, it's getting warm, and it's still cooling off at night a little bit, so I'm giving thanks for that for a while. And I'm just really happy that we have an opportunity to get together and talk about such important things as we are going to speak about today. We're celebrating 100 years of the science of mind philosophy. So we're taking that based upon the first book that was published by Ernest Holmes, the founder, in 1918, and that book was called Creative Mind. And so every week I'm sharing quotes from that book and talking about that, the way that we have this gorgeous staying power to a vital message, and always we've had this ability to say it a slightly different way so that it reaches a broader audience, and we have an opportunity to look at what Holmes meant when he was talking about the Declaration of Principles. Thank you, Cheryl, for doing that reading. She came prepared she has this book that has more markers in it than mine does. And she came prepared, and she's always really proud of what she finds because she does a good job keying something to my message. But I asked her if she wouldn't mind reading from The Essential Earnest today. And the segment that she was reading was not actually what Holmes wrote, but somebody had asked him, "So what do you believe?" He was being interviewed one day. And so he did a good representation of what all of New Thought aligns to, and specifically his take on what we call the science of mind teaching. But he was giving a talk. So all those words that you just heard Cheryl read were sort of his explanation of the Declaration of Principles that we now have come. We've shortened it, and we have it on the wall out there. And so the very first principle that we talk about is what my message is about today, and that's why I wanted to pull that up. We're looking at, so Centers for Spiritual Living is doing 100 years celebration of the message being out. But the individual centers around the globe are focusing on a new theme each month and a theme each weekend. So in May, our new theme is, ready, Reverend Cheryl? You're going to love this. The theme for May is spiritual laws and how to use them. Say no more. Saying, I think you should start that class again next week so that you do it all month to fulfill this theme for May. And in the very first weekend, I don't always follow the exact recommendation for this Sunday because sometimes it doesn't fit with what I'm called to say to you. But this week, it was spot on, and the theme that all the ministers are trying to unite on is direct contact with the infinite. And so the title of my message today is The Divine Urge of Love. And I think that that is such a beautiful topic because Holmes has a really, really distinct way of referring to God in very broad terms, especially when we're talking about this idea of love. And so that's what we're going to look at today. But before I proceed, I want to read to you the quotation that I found in that 100-year-old publication of Holmes, where I pulled the title for the message today. And these are the words of Ernest Holmes 100 years ago. Some things just don't change. Humankind lives in a mind that presses in upon us from all sides with infinite possibilities. The divine urge of love crowds itself upon us, awaiting our recognition. So this is a really powerful, this is a potent statement that all of humanity lives in this, I think of it as like this whole universal mind, this infinite intelligence And that mind, that intelligence, is pressing in upon us all the time, which means these infinite possibilities are bombarding us from every side, desiring to be expressed through us in the way that we live our lives. And when he takes that very next sentence and he says, the divine urge of love crowds itself upon us, I want you to see he's talking about that mind, that infinite intelligence, and love as being one and the same. And I think when we look at that passage in the Bible that says God is love, we're not talking about a sentimentality. We're talking about something that is divine, and therefore it has deeper qualities than we can even speak to in our humanity, in our humanness. But what we're talking about is the principle of oneness. And this is what all of New Thought shares. It is what almost every religion teaches, this same thing. When we say that God is omnipotent, all-powerful, ever-present, all-knowing, in all places, at all times, there is no place that God is not. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about the principle of oneness. Therefore, just as it's what makes the plants grow toward the sunshine, it is that same healing force in our bodies, that intelligence or wisdom in the cells of our body that know how to heal us. You get a little cut or a scrape, and your body immediately knows how to take that intelligence, that perfection in healing, and begins to heal us without us having to think it through. While we're still saying a little curse word, probably. We're already starting to heal. So what I really love about this is what this means is that each and every one of us, I don't care what you believe or what religious tradition speaks to your heart, what I know is that each and every one of us has equal access to this activity of life that's intelligent and that is peace and joy and love and all those divine attributes of God. And we are here to experience and to express that love and that peace and that joy and that order and harmony and all of those exquisite ideas of what God is. And that it is pressing in on us from all sides, and every possibility is open to us to have a different experience. So, you know, you could just say, God is. I love to just say, you know, think about it. It's that simple. If you didn't remember anything else the next time you walk through a crisis or something scary, God is. Because when I remember that, I know, okay, it doesn't matter what this looks like right now. God is right here, and I'm going to walk through this. God is, and I am absolutely a part of that oneness of all of life. And so God cannot be missing or void. That intelligence cannot be lacking. That love cannot be kept away from me. But it's up to me to remember that great truth. So just as God is and love is, I am, you are, and we are all in this exquisite, I'm proud of myself. We're in this exquisite divine soup of life, you know, that we're all just like swimming about in it, and it's all a part of what that is. Now, when I think about love like that, and I'm not trying to define what love is, and I don't care what how the dictionary says it or what anybody else thinks. If I am meditating in the morning or I'm having my prayerful contemplation in the morning, then what I know about love is that I can feel it or sense it. It doesn't have words. I don't have to describe it. And what I know is that those are the times when, not from an intellectual point of view, but from the experience of just knowing that right where I am, love is, that's when I understand those quirky little statements like, only love is real. What's that other one? Love is all there is. Love is all there is. Only love is real. These are things I say, but I notice that I don't always understand what I'm saying when I speak them. I'm speaking it because I'm trying to get back to that place of feeling it and knowing it as being that great truth that I want to remember at any perfect time. So all of life, I believe the whole point of the spiritual journey is about us waking up to it, becoming aware that these possibilities are pushing in on all sides, that love is just permeates everything and there for us to notice. Now, it comes with a very heavy heart to say what I'm about to say, but and many of you have heard already, but we are less one beautiful shining practitioner in our community because on Friday, Judy Thompson made her transition. And we know that, when I think about love, that is an image that I see. She had something fierce about the way she loved. And what I can tell you is I visited with Judy on Thursday. I must have visited with her on Thursday. And I asked her, I said, "Are you leaving? You know, she's been in and out of the hospital so much." And I said, "Do you think you're leaving?" And she said, "No, actually, I don't think I'm leaving, but I'm not afraid to." And it was so beautiful to stand there and witness her stand in her truth and into what she believed. And then she and I had a wonderful prayer together. And to just know that this woman has, that she is our practitioner here at the West Valley Center that had the most seniority. She's been doing this longer than I've been doing this. And it has just been a joy for all of us. So we know that love is still here. We know that that essence of Judy is still here. We know there is this eternality of life that continues. And yet we can feel sad, right? Because sadness does not mean love is not there. And I think these are the kinds of experiences that invite us to open ourselves to have a broader definition of what God is and what life is and what all of that means to us. I was reflecting on the idea that how hard it is to wrap our brain around love and how difficult it is for us to wrap our brain around life, and that how sometimes we get confused and think that the finite is it. But life is so much more than just this, right? Life is so much more. I wanted to read you this morning from, you've heard me say this, those of you who have been here before. So some of you will be hearing it for the first time. There's a beautiful chapter on immortality in the Science of Mind textbook. This would be a fabulous time to reread it, especially pages 384 and 385. And here's a quote that I read to you all of the time, but I want you to think of it today in terms of our humanity. "Nature will not let us stay in any one place too long. She will let us stay just long enough to gather the experience necessary to the unfolding and the advancement of the soul. This is a wise provision, for should we stay here too long, we would become too set and too rigid and too inflexible. Nature demands the change in order that we may advance." And here's the sentence I don't usually add, but the last sentence of that paragraph says, "When the change comes, we should welcome it with a smile on our lips and a song in our hearts." So a new adventure has begun for our beautiful friend, and we will certainly miss her. And I know she is moving sweetly in the hands of God in that divine illumination, and that we will come together with that love as a community and help each other heal and to help the family. And thank you, Jimmy, so much for being here today. It was very brave of you. We're grateful to have you. Jimmy is her son. Now, when I look at what love is, I often think back to the Course in Miracles, because I studied the Course in Miracles long before I found the Science of Mind. And there's this paragraph. It's like a preface in the book. It's got this page where there's just this one little lonely paragraph floating on this page just before the first chapter. And it says this: "This course does not aim at teaching the meaning of love, for that is beyond what can be taught. It does aim, however, at removing the blocks to your awareness of the presence of love in your life. And so what I love about that is that just tells me that everything on my journey that doesn't feel like love is an opportunity for me to re-examine what's blocking me right now from seeing that love is right here. And so this, I think, is what the spiritual journey is about. It's what spiritual growth or spiritual deepening is about. It's about becoming increasingly aware of a bigger truth. So to sense love, to feel the presence of love, we have to be conscious in a specific way. So right now, you know, just join me in noticing that love is in this room. You know, just take a minute, close your eyes if you have to, but feel that presence of love that is just permeating this room and the way that that love is pressing up against you right now. See, love is always present. But then notice that, you can open your eyes now. Notice that at the same time as you can be feeling that love, if I stay quiet too long, your mind starts thinking about, well, what are they serving in that potluck? My tummy's feeling a little hungry, right? Or, wow, I can't wait till I can get home and put on my comfortable clothes and take off these shoes, you know? Or maybe even your mind will go to something that happened last night that wasn't pleasant, and suddenly you can feel that weight on you. So we have to be vigilant. We have to be conscious in a very specific way to be aware of the presence of love, and that's what the principle of oneness is all about. That's what everything we do here is urging us to become aware of. It reminds me of that story, you know that story of the two little fish that are swimming along. Two little fish are swimming along, just minding their own business, going about their day, and this other big fish comes swimming in the other direction, and he's much bigger, and he's much older. He's a sagey old fish. He's had a lot of fish experiences, and he sees the two little fish as he's going by, and he goes, well, good morning, boys. How's the water? And they go, fine. And he passes and goes his way, and they get a little distance from him, and then they look at each other, and one of them goes, what the hell is water? And that's how I think it is that we're sort of swimming in this divine sea of humanity and of life and all this universal energy and all this stuff that is, it gives us a bigger concept of what God is and that way in which we can be one with it, or really one of it. So sometimes the most obvious realities of life are hardest to see. They're camouflaged by these thick forests of facts that sidetrack where we're headed or what we're thinking about. So our job is just to be attentive. I think that's why church will always have to exist, because we need to get together once a week and remind each other of these truths. Otherwise, it would be nothing but potluck and well, you know, whatever your vices are. So our learning, I like to say, is incremental. You know, it comes through experience. It has little to do, with knowledge. It has everything to do with what we do, with what we go through, and how we make sense of our own life. So even though this truth, this great essential truth, is so simple, and it is essential, and it's right in front of us, it is still hidden in plain sight, and we get to keep reminding ourselves again and again, oh, this is water. Oh, this is life. This is what that is. Now, in quantum physics, they're doing, I think it's so thrilling that, I don't care whether people argue against it or for it, I just think it's thrilling that a bunch of nerdy scientific kind of people are getting together and talking about the union of spiritual ideas with science, or with physical being, with physical life. In fact, Neil Donald Walsh gave a really fine definition of quantum physics. He said, quantum physics is a scientific explanation of God as a system. Isn't that great? It's a system and it has individual parts that are watching itself impacting those parts. Now, if we just looked at that on the human level, we can get that. You know, we're always paying attention to what's going on with other people, and we're sort of comparing ourselves and measuring ourselves and trying to fit in or trying not to fit in if you're Juliana. I love you, Juliana, sister of my heart. But I think of it this way. You know, I'm an old midwife. I taught childbirth classes for many years, and I have this image of what it's like before birth. I used to talk to people about this in class when I was teaching. So it's like you get this infant that is growing in the womb, and that everything is perfect in that environment. It's floating in this, you know, lovely water that's the perfect temperature. He's never hungry. He doesn't have to worry about inhaling or exhaling yet. Everything he needs is provided for him or her. And so life is comfortable. But the infant at that point does not have any sense of that source of life, the mother. There is no relationship with mother yet. Everything just is. Life just is. And so that developing baby is absolutely one with all of that, without having any sense of separation. And then the time of birth comes. It must be quite traumatic. I think they probably become aware of some finiteness before birth because it gets kind of squished in there. It's not as comfortable as it used to be. But the moment of birth is that part where the individualized consciousness that is you, or that is this new being coming into human form, that's the moment where we notice we have a physical body, and therein begins the idea of separation. So we could say it's a relationship of the physical with the non-physical. No longer is it just one source. And everything starts to change. It becomes an experience of feeling separate and learning to be part of the whole. So Barbara Marx Hubbard says it's the time when the local self and the non-local self become one. It is that place where the local self, the me, and the non-local, everywhere, the soup, the water, everywhere, it's that point where we understand that it sounds like two, and yet it's just one. So sometimes we say we are the microcosm of the macrocosm, of this bigger intelligence of all the universe, or God. But once we're born, we begin to relate in sort of a separate way. I also could say it in this way. I think this is a good example. Some of you have heard this before. We have fingers and toes and arms, and that my fingers and my arms are a part of my body. Right? They are part of the whole of my body. And we, my fingers and toes and all of that, we make one physical being. So this arm is me. This arm is me, but it's not all of who I am. Right? So Neil Donald Walsh puts it this way. This is a great quote from his book, Tomorrow's God. You are an individuated part of God, which means, by definition, you cannot possess the totality of understanding this stuff. The non-individuated idea that God, the ultimate reality, whatever you call it, you cannot possess the totality of understanding that ultimate reality. We can only do the best we can by getting little increments or moments of knowing that there is something greater than we are, and that we're connected to it, and we can align ourselves to it, and that we can live our lives with more joy and more harmony when we find that place where we are sort of vibrationally intertwined with life as that sort of cosmic soup. So a drop of water from the ocean does not have all the power of the ocean. A drop of water from the ocean is exactly the same composition as the ocean, but it does not have all the power that it does. So it is an individuation, just as we are. It is not the collective, and the individuation and the collective are never the same. Now, I know that's hard to understand. It's like, what the hell is water? It takes us right back to the, it's like, I don't know, that's a lot of thinking. But here's what I think. This is the point I've been building to. So here I'm ready to lay it on you now. I think that's why we have always needed these great sagey, enlightened beings who come to the planet as human beings and somehow intuit all of that. They figure it out. They get it. They teach it. They talk about it. They have a slightly different example than most of us. And so you get all your Lao Tzu and Buddha and Moses and Jesus. And what happens is we have these enlightened and outstanding ways of looking deeper at what all of that means. And so when I think about Jesus, for instance, you know, here's a guy who clearly, I think he understood that it was difficult for the rest of us to get what he was trying to say. And that's why he dedicated his life to it. I think that he understood that we're a part of God, but he understood that we don't get that we're a part of God. He said, he declared himself to be one with the Father. He said, I am the Son of God, and you and I are siblings. He said, I am the way, I am the life. And then he told us to live our lives in that image, in that way, in that example, and then you too will have an experience of God. You will begin to understand that oneness that is difficult to understand. So I think that he was so fully evolved that he could actually like sit with us and say, I get it, you know, I watch you, I observe, I witness that you don't believe in yourself the way I believe in you. He could say to us things like, I get it, you just don't understand that you too are divine, that intelligence is in you, that divine wisdom is what you are made out of. And so maybe it's just easier for us to see ourselves as brothers in Christ rather than one with God. Man, see, now that puts it all together for me. That puts it together, and that's when I can see that this beautiful example of Jesus the Christ as the elder brother has a lot for me to learn from, that there are great things that were demonstrated in his ministry and his teaching. Fabulous wisdom, and sometimes I get frustrated and think, but we've missed the meat of some of the great message that Jesus brought. Sometimes I really think that people just miss it. But you know what? Lately, I don't think that's true. I don't think we miss it at all. I think that, like always, we take what we can comprehend at any given time. And that when we don't have all the pieces yet, we can't understand the next thing that's coming. And what is very exciting for me is that we are living in these tumultuous times where this message is more important than it ever was before. We are living in times that are relevant. Something is trying to emerge on this planet. Nobody would try and deny that. That there is some way in which all things are changing now. And as we read, we change so that we may advance. We don't change for an ending. We have this great invitation to understand the eternality, the continuity of life, that great urge that is always pressing in upon us. So I believe that the message of Jesus is given to exalt us. It's given to make you rise, not to make you feel less than, not to put us down. And I want us to realize that there's something beautiful in the message of love and the message of compassion, in the way that Jesus spoke of forgiveness and relationships with each other, that we don't want to miss that right now. And as we're living in the planet right now, there's an urgency in it for me. And I don't even really think it matters that everybody understands it in the way that I understand it, but I do think it's important for us to be talking about it. And it's important for us to be expanding our idea of what God is and what love is. Emma Curtis Hopkins, one of my favorite Christian mystics. Okay, my favorite Christian mystic. Emma said, she was scholastically, academically very trained in understanding world religions, and she was very smart. And Emma called what she recognized as her truth and what she taught, she called it the Jesus Method. And I like that. I like that. It's the Jesus Method because it explains so well that there is a method we can imitate that can have life-changing, transformational impact on our living. And what Emma said was, many minds rebel at the word God. She said that we can learn to, if we learn to exchange other words for the name God, if we tried out, for instance, the word good, that might help us. Because she says many minds rebel at the word God because people have been bruised or disappointed. But if you say instead, God is good, good is God. If you say instead, there is a good for everyone, and everyone ought to have it, then each mind agrees. And boy, every time I say that in here, we agree. We stand united and say, there is a good for me, and I ought to have it. There is a good for me, and I ought to have it. One more time. There is a good for me, and I ought to have it. And as much as you want your good wants you. It is pressing in upon you from all directions, infinite possibilities for that experience of good in your life, that experience of love in your life, to know peace, to know joy, to know that perfect divine harmony and order in our lives, even if it's just incremental. Because there is this continuity that is forever and ever expanding. And I think that's what has me so fired up this year. It's this new, Walsh calls it a new spirituality. I don't think it's a new spirituality. And I think that the beautiful part about it is that we're invited to see that it doesn't matter what religion, tradition you come from, that there is a way that nobody is asking us to abandon our traditional teachings, but rather the lean towards spirituality now is just inviting us to expand what we believe, to believe in a less closed manner, to be more inclusive, and to honor other paths to God that might not be our path. And I love that we say that here every week, and I want you to really think about it this week. As you're moving through your day, I think that we do really want to honor all paths to God until someone comes up to us and tries to talk to us about their religion. And then we don't know what to do with that. So let us know that love that permeates all things is right there to support us even through those moments. And as we practice not letting our heart close, no matter what's going on, and being a part of that vibrational intertwining that happens in that great and large and glorious way, that we then know what water is. We understand our place in the full of it. We all exist in this universal soup of life. And so I wanted to leave you with some beautiful words from that same chapter in Creative Mind, the book published 100 years ago, where Holmes said, "Love is the givingness of life. It is a great transformative power. Love is a principle that unifies and harmonizes everything. It is a healing force." Your task this week, my friends, is to notice that. Allow yourself to feel that presence of the divine pushing in on you, urging you to be open to that experience of love. Let's anchor these words in prayer. Just get comfortable where you're seated. And at this time, I would like to call forward any of the practitioners or ministers in the room so that we might circle this room in the memory of Judy Thompson, in the consciousness that that beautiful soul always brought to this community. This one's for you, babe. Oh, so it's not hard to just feel that love in this room right now. To just notice that there's something palpable. That presence that quickens us from the inside. That reminds us that this activity of life, this movement of all things in that eternal and forever direction of expansion, that is what God is, that is what life is. And so I feel the love of God in this room. I recognize that love as it stirs at the core of each person in this room, each practitioner standing in circle in the sanctuary. I know that love is all there is and that love is the only thing that is real because it is something that we recognize in this very moment. And how blessed we are to know that there is this great union of us with all. That nothing can stand in the way of God's good that is pushing in on us. That love that is stirring us. I know that there is this immensity of life that we have yet to even notice, that even as the flowers open in full bloom and their fragrance spreads around this room, that there is life and that life is forever expanding in such a way that the soul advances on this beautiful journey. That what looks like the end of one phase is merely the beginning of the next. And so I say, thank you, God. Thank you, life. How wonderful to remember yet again how good life is. How important it is to know that this is the day the Lord has made. And we stand in this and we rejoice in this. And I give thanks for the ways in which we see those demonstrations of life always reappearing in new forms. And so, what a gorgeous day this is to once again know the truth. All there is God, that God is, that I am, that we are, and that we are all in this together. And that there is this beautiful sea of humanity. There is this gorgeous soup of cosmic universal intelligence that permeates everything. And so I know that there is a healing going on right now. And so for anyone who is experiencing a health challenge, I know that the words of this prayer activate that healing force so that we are restored to our wholeness. And just as this is true for each person here, it is true for all of our loved ones as well. And it is that essence of truth that ripples out of this sanctuary and into the world and around this planet. And we bless this day and this community and life itself today. We bless it richly and wholly, knowing that we are sourced completely by this one mind, this mind of God, this one love, this one essence of beauty and perfection and peace and wonderment. I say thank you, God. Thank you, life. We are open to receive these blessings. And in that spirit of deep, deep gratitude, I simply release the words of this prayer into that divine law that can only say yes, yes, and so it is. Amen.